So then, how about the symbol? On the surface, it would seem that the symbol in your work shapes the inexpressible, not unlike Levi-Strauss's interpretation of the sick woman. But here too, both the symbol and the inexpressible serve as an external and an internal world of the individual, or in fact, not so individual perceptions. Levi-Strauss, however, somehow maintained the symbol as a thing without a content. He believed he was able to describe forms as images passing through the subconscious, which in his view remained as empty as the stomach which passes food. Contrary to this view, your symbols refer to concrete realities of life, and in fact shape every aspect of it. As a matter of fact, here, Karl Popper and Levi-Strauss seem to make definite choices about a firm belief in an external world of phenomena. Their theories proclaim that nothing seems to be able to come from inside the individual body. No soul, no perception, not even a personal eclecticism, but a mere reaction of a biological jar, a womb perhaps again, to be filled with constructions and structures of an external world and consequently react rather than act. I've always sensed both of them were wrong concerning this view. Nobody perceives his or her body as an empty mechanical or biological mechanistic structure that reacts to an outside world for survival purposes. Even if it were true, like Levi-Strauss believes, that a race is a function of culture, it is sheer ludicrous to maintain such a view, as so much of this robotism can be deconstructed as a result of techno-mythological ideas dating back to the first quarter of this century. The historian Baun, for instance, writes that robotism forms a timeless motive for human beings to reproduce their own functions as part of an industrial production. Compared to this external technocratic world of Popper and Levi-Strauss, however, the symbolic world that you describe might not be so internal, coming from within the individual body, as you make it out to be. Rather, the opposition here is one of a technocratic versus a nature myth. The symbolism you uphold is part and parcel of the Western world, in which, as Simon Sharma puts it, so many of our modern concepts, empire, nation, freedom, enterprise, and dictatorship, have invoked a topography to give their ruling ideas a natural form. And this traditional naturalism has been an equal frustration in the first quarter of this century to so many great artists. One of them was Wassily Kandinsky. I present him to you because he truly tried to touch the inner experience without the justification of a traditional symbolism. And in this sense, he was unique. And although I do not agree with this somewhat over-convinced way of pertaining art, his experiments were bold, daring, and gave an absolute refreshing interpretation of the symbol, the word, and the image that neither you nor Popper nor Levi-Strauss has ever thought about. Would you have read his book about the spiritual in art, which he wrote in the beginning of this century, you might have realized that your processes of individuation could have gone anywhere in time and could end with the prima materia of chaos as much as it could begin with it. True enough, psychoanalysts have always been suspicious of artists. True again, Freud believed that artists were neurotic. I cannot help but think that this suspicion is the result of the fact that some artists, like some brave philosophers, tend to defy all the rules that social science could come up with. The irony in this alone has touched your own development as well. I recall, for instance, in your autobiography, a passage about a period in your life in which you were in contact with a highly intelligent woman, as you called her. She wrote you letters in which she pointed out the artistic value of your drawings and paintings, and it made you doubt for some time if you were not truly an artist rather than scientist. You ended up, however, proclaiming the woman to be a trickster, trying to lure you away from your real purpose in life. The fact that you believe that she was trying to trick you because you were not good enough as an artist make me think you were more worried about the authority of your present work and your career than about your capacity as an artist. This trickster, and it's a pity you could not even come up with a name for her. Come to think of it, you would probably view Kandinsky as a highly psychotic or even schizophrenic person. Again, a theory of artistic expression is not your favorable subject, not in your work, and neither in Karl Popper's work. Maybe both of you cannot be helped or blamed, as the arrogance of your utterance probably is the result of a neurotic anxiety with models, so dominantly ordered, so dominantly Cartesian. Contrary to the Cartesian view of the physical thing as an object, which should be given a name, a formula, a symbol, or an image to ascertain its material existence, for Kandinsky, the physical thing he calls the what has been lost altogether. The artist being overthrown by a tremendous concrete density of forms, symbols, things from past periods, has hardly any freedom to choose a form in which to express his sense of physical, as well as his sense of spiritual. The how to express has been taken away from individuals. Even though in the generality of signs and discourse, abstraction functions as a level of control over matter, in Kandinsky's work abstraction is a way to reinvent this how, as a release from material images of the past. Tremendously peculiar here is the fact that Kandinsky dares to give up the causal chain of physical conditioning in favor of the sole emotion of the artist, which simultaneously generates his physical experience in order to retrieve the what. And through this view, he creates an unprecedented here and now that has yet to be performed. And Kandinsky writes, "If this how also contains the sole emotion of the artist, and furthermore is capable to release his subtile experience, then the art already stands at the threshold of the way on which it will later unfailingly recover the lost what. The what which will imagine the spiritual breath of the current beginning, spiritual maturation. This what will no longer be the what of its past periods." Kandinsky's purpose here is to show that by eradicating the symbolism of the past, the concrete as well as the physical, the content of the what, could be recovered. This what you describe concerning the symbols steaming from the collective subconscious, and especially as being bordered by their visual outward appearance, are in fact forms, not contents. Now, one could say that it is possible to transfer any content onto these forms in such a way that the meanings of these images become endlessly variable. These seemingly endless meanings, however, will never become anything but a repetition, ruled by one God, which is the symbol that stands for the physical past. Adding to these symbols, more and more contents do not make them real. In fact, it creates them into being physical objects in such a way that the symbols quite literally inflate in a system of self-reverence, not of the individual body, but of symbols referring to symbols. We therefore cannot know what the quest is about in the life of the dreamer. We therefore cannot know what the quest is about in the life of the dreamer. We only know that the dreamer is bombarded by images from the surrounding society. Following Kandinsky's view, the opposite of your purpose is shown. Within Kandinsky's view, the whole purpose of your individuation process might be to get rid of these symbols in order to retrieve the what, the content of life, rather than its simulacrum. A big clean-up job, so to speak. Who knows? The dreamer might search the past for clues on expressing the inexpressible. The unity of animus and anima might be a compensation for the desolate loneliness of the process, a lover's discourse, or a quest for partnership. At the end of this process, the dreamer might find, as did Kandinsky, that there cannot be an expression of self through the application of the symbols of the collective subconscious, lest it would be of past tense. The inexpressible might not have name, neither a symbol, it might not even have a physical thing to which it could refer. It might not even be material for the rest of society. Society at large could not wave it away by saying, immaterial, unimportant. Self-expression might not follow the rules of a physical matrix or, as Kandinsky views, there cannot be a theory ruling this principle on the way into the realm of the non-material. Neither can it crystallize its materialistic, as it does not materially exist yet. The spirit who travels into the world of tomorrow can be acknowledged only through the sense perception. And here, the Cartesian matrix is rendered as helpless as Peter Arnett without his camera, or genuinely quoted from War in the Gulf. So, Peter Arnett, CNN does not have an image of Baghdad. Can you describe what you see? And Peter answers, well, I see some flashes lightning up in the sky, but I could tell you what I hear. It goes something like boom, boomity boomity boom, boomity 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 boom. Maybe less of a joking matter than it seems, but then again, the essence of the sense perception does not entail the difference between one perception or another, like sight or sound, but by the mixed categories they convey, as Steven Tyler once said. In this case, the sad humoristic irony of bodies being bombed to pieces through the mouth of an over-enthusiastic reporter. The more he repeats boom, the quicker the sound will lose its content. Repetition, then, of the symbol. What else could it signify but that? Repetition, reption, repton, repton, reptonton, ratata, ratata, ratatar. But Kandinsky still takes us further, into the third item of another problem concerning the myth, the individual, and the physical. It deals with the inexpressible, the neither one thing psychiatrist nor anthropologist could ever get their hands on. So how about the inexpressible?